One of my favorite things to do is to introduce you to great books, and today we're going to do that. Chip Heath is a good friend of mine. He's a professor at Stanford Graduate School of Business. He's a New York Times bestselling author. His new book is one of my favorites. It's called The Power of Moments. You're going to want to listen. You're going to want to take notes because there are some moments that matter more than others.
This is the Craig Rochelle Leadership Podcast.
This is Craig Rochelle, and I'm here with my friend Chip Heath, who is an amazing best-selling author and professor at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. Chip, I could not be more excited to have you here with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, several years ago, I had the privilege of interviewing you and your brother Dan at the Global Leadership Summit on a previous book that you'd written on change management called Switch. And that interview changed my thinking on change. Today, I am thrilled to interview you about your new book that you released with your brother called The Power of Moments. And before we get into this book, I just need to say you sent me a copy before it came out kind of to review and give you some thoughts. I read it then. Since it's come out, I read it a second time, and I've listened to it two other times.
Wow.
It's kind of safe to say I'm obsessed with it. I read and listen to a lot of
books. Well, we probably should have written it better so you didn't have to listen to it so many times.
No. No, I read and listen to a lot of books, and I put your book in the top three books that I've recommended over the last 5 years.
Wow.
And that's the top of a lot of books. I'm telling everybody about it. And so I can't wait for our listeners to hear about this book, to get the book, and to start living it out. Before we dive in, Chip, to the book, I'd love to kind of help people get to know you. You're a professor of organizational behavior at Stanford. Can you tell us a little bit of your background and how you ended up teaching at Stanford?
So I was an engineer as an undergrad, and I fell in love with decomposing problems and coming up with solutions from an engineering perspective. But when I decided to go to graduate school, I was thrilled to discover psychology. And the kind of psychology that I was studying was how people learn and remember and make decisions. And so I was fascinated by that kind of psychology. And when I graduated with my PhD degree, I applied to business schools because that was some of the place where I felt like there was the most application for people making better decisions and for groups functioning better. And so I spent my career teaching MBA students and executives to think about organizations and why they work and sometimes don't work.
Well, I'm glad that you've taken what you've learned through organizational behavior and written the books that you've written. Whenever your next one comes out, I want a copy early and get on it. But let's talk about the content in your book. In it, Chip, you talk about the importance of certain moments in our lives and how certain moments disproportionately matter to us. To help our listeners get a sense of the kind of moments that you're getting at, tell us maybe one of your favorite stories of what you might call a defining moment.
So one of my favorite stories is a story that comes up early in the book. It's about a hotel called the Magic Castle Hotel in Los Angeles. And on TripAdvisor, it's one of the top three ranked hotels. In fact, number one is a hotel that's very chic, very, very Hollywood. They have heated floors in the bathrooms. There's a pool that's the size of Connecticut. And it's a stunningly elegant hotel. Number two is the Magic Castle Hotel that's in a converted 1960s apartment building, painted kind of a Big Bird shade of yellow. And so the facility is not great. The pool is probably smaller than the average suburban pool, home pool. And yet they have extraordinarily high TripAdvisor ratings. And to understand that, one of my favorite aspects of the Magic Castle Hotel is there's a red phone beside the pool. Looks like it's Cold War era surplus that the president might pick it up to call the Soviet premier at a critical moment. And above the phone is a sign that says Popsicle Hotline. And so you go over and you pick up the phone, and somebody in the office says, "We'll be right there." And a few minutes later, somebody emerges out of the office carrying a silver tray, wearing white gloves, and there are popsicles mounted on the tray, and they pass the popsicles around to the people sitting at the pool. And the kids are smiling, the adults are smiling. It's a magical moment. And it's extraordinarily inexpensive. It's extraordinarily clever. And that kind of thing done over and over again is what makes the Magic Castle successful. And yet, we go to hotels for the most part, and the hotel that we're staying in Austin, Texas, looks like the hotel that we stayed in San Francisco. There's no sense of place that we're in. There's no sense of a moment that we're in that's different in New Orleans than Chicago, than New York City. And so what the Magic Castle Hotel has done very effectively is get people to think in a different way, to experience the world in a different way, and that's creating a moment.
So I love this. I'm picturing a relatively normal hotel with rooms that don't stand out, what otherwise might be an ordinary experience, but someone comes in and they're taken aback, they're surprised, they have something to talk about. So you've got a business that is otherwise predictable and yet does something that creates this kind of moment. What do you think this type of moment does in the mind of the consumer, the person who's staying at that hotel?
I think what it does is it stands out from a background of sameness. And one of the points about creating moments, if we're creating moments for our families, we do the same thing a lot of the time on Saturdays. And one of the favorite exercises that we came up with when we were piloting the material for the book is the surprise Saturday. And we said to parents, let your kids plan a Saturday for you. And whatever they want to do is fair game. And your role is to say yes as a parent to everything that you can possibly say yes to. And so there are these extraordinary stories that came out of that, just doing something different and looking at the world through the eyes of your 7-year-old, for example. And what people say is it's amazing that what they weren't doing is saying, let's go to the amusement park. They're saying, can we pop popcorn and watch movies all afternoon? Mm-hmm. The answer is yes. You know, can we go hang out at the pool and bring some hot dogs that we cooked at home? Yes. And so what's amazing, I think, is that it's so easy to create these moments, and yet we're not doing it as families, and we're not doing it in our businesses.
That's what I loved about the book, is I think it spoke to me on so many different levels. I found myself reading it, and one time seeing myself as a dad in it, and how can I create moments with my kids. And the next time I'd read the very same paragraph, and I'd see myself as a leader, how can I take this to my organization? And so it really speaks to so many different facets of who we are as people. I want to kind of pull more out of you, because I think it can be really helpful. You did a in-depth analysis of different kinds of defining moments and what specifically makes them memorable. Your first insight that really hit me is about how memory works, and you talked about the significance of what you call peaks and endings. And I'd love to hear kind of your thoughts on what is it that we do, why do peaks and endings make things memorable?
Yeah, this has been an important area of research in psychology over the last 20 years. And in fact, Danny Kahneman, who won the Nobel Prize a few years ago for economics, is a psychologist by training, and he's piloted a lot of this research in terms of what we remember. And so if you think about your life as a university student, a lot of you went to university, and it's 4 years or 5 years, and if a researcher asks you what you remember about that 4 or 5 year period in your life, it turns out that you've forgotten most of it, but about 40% of your memories will come from the first 6 weeks of freshman year. Now, why is that such a robust time and memorable time? Well, there are a couple of things that psychologists say. Is that one is things that are highly emotional are much more memorable. And showing up to college as a freshman and going to a party for the first time without somebody checking up on you at the end of the evening, or using a bank account, opening a bank account for the first time, something I did when I was a freshman, and going to classes and organizing your college schedule, those all become very memorable because they're novel experiences, they're emotional experiences, and they're happening at the beginning of a period. And what psychologists have found is that things that are highly emotional, whether they're peaks or pits, but also things that happen at transitions, are differentially remembered by people. And so when we're trying to create experiences that matter to people, we're not managing everything. What we're trying to do is to manage the peaks and minimize the pits, and work on transitions a little bit more. And yet, we miss opportunities for that all the time. I think about the first day at work. All of us have a finite number of jobs that we're going to hold in our lives. And yet, for the most part, organizations don't do very much at all with the first day of experience. And I think that's a tragedy, because that's a great opportunity to bond with the organization, to get people enthusiastic about the organization. And so I think we miss opportunities because we don't understand the psychology of what makes moments matter.
Let's talk a little bit about that, Chip. I love what you said, that the things that are highly emotional are the things that are most memorable. And typically in our businesses, in our nonprofits, in our workplace, we tend to generally don't drift toward that which is emotional. We kind of often stay in our head and in logic. Let's say we're onboarding a new team member. That's a transition, and you write about the reality that transitions and landmarks, they're ripe for defining moments, and yet we often just let someone come in and sit down and give them a handbook, and that's kind of their orientation. What would you suggest to someone who's maybe bringing on a volunteer into their organization or a new staff member? How can they leverage that moment and create something that is emotional and therefore becomes memorable?
Yeah, I think this is one of the easiest ways to score points on the employee satisfaction scale. I mean, we typically show up for a job and, you know, the receptionist is happy to see us, but they actually thought we were coming early next week. And so it's not a great morning. So I love the story of John Deere. They were entering China in India, and it's a classic American company, but they weren't well known in China and India. And so there was an important bonding moment that they had when they introduced a new employee. And in their revised procedure, I show up in the morning and I meet somebody that I've been texting with, and that person is holding my favorite beverage, which they've cleverly worked into an earlier version of the texting conversation. And the monitor in the back of the entryway says, "Welcome, Chip Heath." And so I go in the back and my computer monitor is hooked up, and there's a screensaver that's showing me beauty shots of tractors. And you might not have thought that tractors could be beautiful, but there are some beautiful pictures of tractors that flash across the monitor whenever it's idle. And so I log into my email, and my first email is from the CEO. And the CEO talks about the history and the legacy of John Deere, and how this is a 175-year-old company. And the first John Deere received the first patent for a plow that allowed farmers to plow 3 acres of land as opposed to 2.5 in a day. And so for 175 years, they say, we've been creating products that allow people to create food for their families and create shelter for themselves. And so I go through the day, and there's a sense of importance. There's a sense of purpose. There's a sense of, this is an organization that matters. And I'm making connections. There's a banner beside my cubicle that enables everybody to see. It sticks up a little bit above the cubicle farm, and so people know that there's somebody new on the floor, and when they have a leisure time during their day, they stop by and say hi. But it's when they're relaxed and ready to talk, as opposed to when the person whisked me around the floor right before lunch. And so I end up the day with connections with people in the organization. I end up with a sense of pride about the work that I'm going to be doing. I end up with a sense of, this is meaningful, this is important. And the reaction of John Deere employees when they started rolling out this program for new employees is, they said, can we start over so that we could go through this? And I think that's a reaction that happens a lot when we finally create a moment for our customers or for our employees, is, why didn't we think of this earlier?
So the first phase of me using your book was exactly because of that teaching. I went and had my assistant buy books for everyone on our HR team. And then once I went all the way through it, I had him get it for everybody on our team. But it's amazing to me how, if there's any time that's important in an employee's life in your organization, it's the first few days. Mm-hmm. And yet we often have, you know, no intentionality. And with just a little bit of effort, we can create not just an appreciation for the job, but a love for it and a real deep missional buy-in. And, you know, if there's anybody who is onboarding anyone, buy the book just for that section alone. I want to kind of dovetail off that, because you write about transitions and landmarks and firsts being moments to create, or opportunities to create moments. What are other types of those opportunities in a business, in an organization, where we can help leverage a success or cheer someone on, or give them something that gives them a real deep sense of pride or a memory that helps propel them forward.
Yeah, I think you've just listed a bunch of important ones. There are landmarks that are handed to us by life, and so, you know, transition from not being an employee to the first day is a big transition. A transition from being an individual contributor to a manager is an important transition, and we don't celebrate that nearly enough. What if we had a moment and handed people a whistle or a plaque with a whistle and said, you know, from now on, you're the coach. You put points on the board by working through other people, and this is the time when you're going to change your mindset from being an individual contributor to being a coach of others. I think there are tons of moments like that inside an organization. There are tons of moments like that outside an organization. Nobody listening to this podcast, even if you paid off a quarter of your mortgage or half your mortgage, did you get a note from your bank saying, congratulations, you know, you've reached a substantial milestone. And probably never has it happened that the bank manager, when you complete your mortgage, shows up at your front door with the deed to your house and makes a ceremony of turning it over to you. In fact, we're talking to one bank and they said, we do even worse than that. We charge people a fulfillment fee for finishing up your mortgage. And so a moment that should be a moment of celebration becomes a moment of additional pain.
Well, imagine if the bank would do that, just how that customer would come back to the bank for other to do other things and then recommend the bank like crazy just for caring. And that's one of the things I love about the book is it doesn't take a lot of money to create a moment. It doesn't even take a lot of effort sometimes. It just takes being engaged, caring, and doing something. And the dividends can go beyond what anybody could really imagine. I want to talk about the four different ways that you write about that moments become memorable. You talk about moments of elevation, and that's the peaks. You talk about moments of insight. You talk about moments of pride. And then you write about moments of connection. For the sake of time, I just want to highlight a few that I think could really change the game for leaders. Let's start with the first one. The insight, I think, is so important for any of us who create customer experiences. You talk about the peak experience, kind of like the popsicles. What goes into creating a peak experience that a customer might enjoy?
I think that the real hint that we got from doing the research on elevation is that sensory experience matters. And one of my favorite questions to ask to an audience is, how many of you have a box from an Apple product that is just so cool that you couldn't bear to throw it away? And Apple has less than 50% market share in the phone market, for example. But basically, everybody that ever had an Apple phone has a box from an Apple phone somewhere in their house because it's you know, the suction on that thing when you're trying to open it up and see your new iPhone is so powerful that it's a moment. And only somebody as crazy as Steve Jobs would put the extra money in. And extra money is like the difference between a great box and a so-so box is $2 versus 60 cents, you know. And on an $800 purchase, that's not much. But thinking about that experience carefully is something that Apple does and almost nobody else does. And so it's moments of sensory experience. It's intensifying those moments that really makes for a moment of elevation.
Take something that's ordinary, opening up a box, and create a cult-like love for the organization because there's something special or different that stands out. Let's talk about what you call a moment of insight. And I love this idea because it's really critical, especially for those who teach others or mentor others or lead. And you say that a key to learning moments often comes through experiences that stretch us, give us insight. Kind of unpack that for us, please.
Well, I think insight was an insight for Dan and I because so many of the moments that we talk about in customer service situations are moments of pleasure. And yet, when we think about insight, a lot of insights are painful. It's like I take a job and I realize this is not the job for me after some painful experiences, or I stretch to meet a deadline or to do something different than I've done before, and I realize I came up short. And so many moments of insight are moments that are painful moments. But one of the most interesting studies that I've seen recently, there's a great book called The Challenger Sale And researchers interviewed people about the salespeople that were most useful for them as B2B organizations, the customer side of the B2B interaction. And sure enough, the person that we think of as a classic salesperson that manages the relationship that's there 24/7, those kind of salespeople were valued. But even more, what customers valued is the person that they said, you know, it wasn't always easy interacting with so-and-so because they challenged me. And they challenged me to think about my organization differently or my industry differently. But man, was that useful. And so it's kind of interesting that the salespeople that are making people feel comfortable in the relationship are not the most valued. It's the salespeople that are asking me questions that produce insights that may make me uncomfortable. Those are the people that are most valued. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind as mentors and managers and parents, is sometimes the things that we do for people producing insights, even if those insights may be challenging at the time.
You know, that really speaks to me as a guy who played sports growing up as an athlete. The coaches that I remember weren't the soft ones. They were the ones that pushed us to do more. And I think as leaders, sometimes we want to be liked and we want to be popular. And maybe something better is to be respected. And by helping push people and have that aha moment or the realization they can do more, giving that insight might actually be more valuable when we're a little bit more firm or more honest or give them direct feedback than when we're trying to be liked and popular. Another insight that's really critical for those of us who lead teams and organizations, you talk about that meaning or purpose builds defining moments of connection. And I really love the way you write about connection. Talk about why shared purpose actually connects people and then creates really valuable moments.
Yeah, there's an emerging area of research that looks at why we want to lose ourselves in groups. And the traditional economist view of the world is that people are self-interested. They're in for their own goals and agendas. And yet we look around and there are all kinds of groups that people participate in. So political organizations or church organizations or people that are inspired by the mission of a business, that one of the reasons I become a member of that group is because I really value being part of something bigger than myself. And I think very often as leaders, we don't take advantage of that purpose in crafting a purpose to draw people into the mission of an organization. And so we talk about an organization called Sharp Healthcare, one of the biggest healthcare firms in San Diego in the United States. And they committed themselves to become the best place to be a patient, the best place to work, the best healthcare system in the known universe. So they actually had a sense of humor about it. But inspiring that mission and broadcasting that mission energized the organization the way that the nurses were doing things differently, the physicians were doing things differently. But I love the fact that even the groundspeople got engaged, and they noticed that as they walked through the hospital floors that there were patients that never received flowers or never got anything beautiful in their room. And so they started clipping things from outside in the hospital grounds and bringing the flowers in to patients that didn't have any. And they called it the This Bud's For You campaign. And so when you get your maintenance landscaping people involved in your corporate transformation, I think that's a good sign that you've created something that is more of a purpose.
I'm fascinated with that story. I'm always intrigued and want to study in an organization that just, when the bottom line is the bottom line and all you're trying to do is make money, people will not innovate. They're not going to bring their hearts. They're just going to do a job. But you can take any type of work, and if you connect meaning to it, then you're going to have the guys working out in the garden coming up with brilliant ideas to push the mission forward. And I think that's a real challenge to all of us, to look at our organizations and say, how can we connect meaning and purpose to what we're doing? And that's going to drive so much care. In fact, you kind of talk about this, and I really love the way you said it. I highlighted the daylight sound of the page. You talk about a little bit about young leaders today are often kind of coached to find their passion. But you had this really interesting graph in your book about the relative importance of passion and purpose. And you say that purpose is the hands down winner. Talk about your research and what it revealed about purpose.
Well, actually, I've got to give props to the person that did the research that we were just talking about. Morten Hansen at Berkeley went out and interviewed 5,000 leaders and the managers of those leaders. And so these are people that are performing at a very high level. And yet what he finds is that if I have an individual passion about my job, that's good. And it leads to an increase in my chances of being in the top, very top echelon of leaders as measured by this study from maybe, 20% to 40%. I'm not going to remember the numbers in the table precisely. But purpose, buying into something that was broader than myself, buying into a purpose that existed in the organization, that raised things by about double the amount that my individual passion did. And so we often encourage people to do what you're passionate about, but maybe what we ought to be saying is find a purpose that people can buy into. And one of my favorite stories that didn't make it into the book is about a carpet company that started telling people, look, carpets are a huge bit of toxic waste waiting to happen because they're made out of oil. And when we finish with them and we dump them in a landfill, we're dumping oil into a landfill, and very often we burn them up or consume them somehow. And so they started saying, what if we could be environmentally positive as an organization that makes carpets? And all of a sudden, people that would not normally get excited about a carpet company, they're actually located in Georgia, so you get people from New York City saying, if you had told me a few years ago that I was going to be working for a carpet company in Georgia and I'd be excited about it, I would have said you were crazy. But that vision of, could we take a major industry that has been bad for the environment and turn it into something that's net positive is an exciting thing. We don't take the time to unpack why our organization is doing something important and meaningful, because that's what people are going to respond to, and that's what makes leaders great, is buying into that purpose.
Yeah, I think what you said is so important. The why really, really matters. I want to transition a little bit to the how. What do you see as the most significant barrier to creating moments like that in our lives? Why is it that we don't tend to do it more regularly?
I still, even after working on the book, I constantly find myself missing opportunities to create moments. And I think we just get sucked into life and the moment of life, and it does require that you pause a little bit to create a moment. And so, there are some moments that are culturally handed to us. I love, birthday parties are kind of culturally constructed to create moments. They're elevation moments. You've got cupcakes, food and fat and flame and one kind of compact object. And so there's a sensory experience there. We bring together our friends and family, moments of connection. But think about, what if we added some pride to a birthday? And so some families will mark the height of their children against a doorstep, and so you see how much you've grown in the last year. But what if we had a time capsule for each year where we talked about the TV shows that the kid was watching, or the math homework that our child was doing, and our child could look back 2 years and say, wow, I was doing that math 2 years ago? That's so easy. And there would be a tremendous, I think, sense of pride that would come from that minor modification of the birthday procedure, and yet we don't think about those things very often. We don't think about the first day for the employee. We don't think about creating the purpose that's going to inspire the landscape people in our organization. And what Dan and I hope to do by writing this book is give people a set of tools to just prompt them and to think about moments in a different way, and hopefully take away some easy suggestions for making a big impact on people.
So, Chip, you had a couple of great quotes that are incredibly relevant, and I want to read one and have you talk about it, and then I'm going to read the other one. The first one, it kind of really hits me right between the eyes because it's so true in my organization. I know that other leaders are going to relate to this. You say that it's usually no one's job to create a peak. Kind of unpack that for us, if you will.
Well, we have customer complaint departments, and we have TQM and Six Sigma missions to improve our quality whenever we have a complaint or we have a problem. But we've typically got no one that's a member of the peak creation department. And we've got no one that's thinking about how do we generate ideas for how do we do better than we've ever done before. In fact, in our research, organizations say that they spend 80% of their time fixing problems and only 20% of their time devoting to peaks. And yet the research says that there are probably $9 on the table for creating a peak moment for someone as opposed to a dollar that you might get from resolving a complaint. And so the upside is huge, and yet we're not focused in organizations on creating those peak moments.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense because it's the peak moments that we talk about. Anytime someone does something that exceeds the norm in customer service, I become a raving fan and go crazy about that. And yet, you know, if we're only spending 20% of our time working on it, it really shows we're devaluing something that could have so much of a return. You had another quote that just jumps off the page at me. You said this, and it's in regard to creating meaningful moments. You said, "Be aware of the soul-sucking force of reasonableness." Unpack that for me.
Yeah. One of the biggest insights about bureaucracy is that bureaucracy was designed to solve a set of problems. And when Max Weber first described bureaucracy, it was a wonderful thing because instead of allocating resources by nepotism or by arbitrary whim of the leader, we had routines and we had procedures and we're doing things systematically. But because bureaucracies are systematic, we get all the downsides of routinization. And the soul-sucking force of reasonableness says that if somebody at most organizations proposed the popsicle hotline for their organization, for their hotel, well, the first objection would be from the operations people. And they said, "Are you really thought it through the logistics of having the popsicles beside the pool, you know, brought out by the front desk person, and the HR person is going to get involved and say, you know, we've got these highly trained front desk specialists, and do we really want to pull them offline to be passing out popsicles at the pool?" And then they're going to propose, of course, that we make it self-serve, and we have a machine by the pool so that you could self-serve popsicle. And then people say, "Well, but that's kind of expensive. And, you know, suppose we, instead of refrigerated popsicles, suppose we get lollipops, and we give everybody a lollipop." And then the people that are doing OSHA things say, "Well, but lollipops are bad for braces and might be swallowing hazards for the kids." And so systematically everybody doing their thing means that good ideas very often are morphed out of being good and into the domain of plausible, reasonable, routine kind of ideas. And so you kind of wind up with a self-serve sugar dispenser by the pool, and you know, and we've taken all the joy out of the popsicle moment, because what organizations do is they make things standard and predictable and routine. And for the most part, those are good tendencies of organizations. That's what makes organizations reliable at introducing the products and services that they are. But it's death on peak.
So I'm going to summarize kind of what I think you're saying, and if I get it right, you can give me the thumbs up, and then this is going to set some leaders free to go crazy. Would you say this is accurate? To be more successful or to be more memorable, you need to be more unreasonable. Is that fair?
I think that's right. We talk about breaking the script as an important part of organizations that are going to be successful. And so, you know, you want a script because you want to do things predictably right most of the time. But if you don't have moments when you break the script, when, you know, we were talking about families earlier, if you don't have the Saturday that you turn it over to your 15-year-old or your 7-year-old child and say, "This is your Saturday," you miss opportunities to create family moments and moments for our businesses.
I can see it now. There's some husband's going to go home, he's going to break the script. He's going to say, "Come on, we're going out to dinner tonight." And the wife's going to say, "Are you drunk?" Or whatever, but I can feel it coming. I can feel it coming. They're gonna be more unreasonable. Be free. Be creative. Do something. Break the script. But let's talk about intentionality. Based on your research, what is the key to getting over the we're stuck. We know we should do it, but we don't. How do we practically become more intentional in creating memorable moments?
I think that shrinking the change is an important idea. So you want to take a small step towards this. And very often that small step is going to give you momentum. And so you can imagine that first day procedure for the new employee. You start off with something simple, like having the texting buddy that shows up with the favorite beverage in the morning. That's one change, but people are going to be so jazzed about that that it's going to give you enthusiasm and energy to make the next change. So I think the way to start this is to start somewhere, make a gesture, and those things are going to build on each other over time, and you're going to wind up with some incredible moments.
I love that so much, because that's what your book did. Is it moved me both professionally and personally just to start. And I think if we have eyes to see what could be a moment, in fact, there may be someone that goes home and, you know, has an opportunity with a child to stretch them, to offer a word of encouragement. You know, as parents, we forget just how much our kids need that affirmation from us. The same is true in the workplace, that most people don't leave bad companies, they leave bad managers. And right. A simple, you did good, I noticed it, a thank you, a public affirmation, a private affirmation, a handwritten note, a presentation at lunch, an impromptu speech. I love what you say about just getting started. If you were going to give me kind of one final thought, one push, one motivation to help me get started, if I'm not confident, I don't know maybe exactly what to do, what would you say to me to help push me over the line to create something special, something memorable that'll pay amazing dividends in the lives of people I care about?
I'll leave you with one story to show how simple it can be. There's an award at Hewlett-Packard, a great engineering firm, that's called the Golden Banana. And it was inspired by an incident back in the 1960s, so this has a lot of history behind it at this point, where an engineer shows up to a manager's cubicle and talks about a breakthrough that he just made on a problem that the team had been facing. And the manager was so inspired by this and so jazzed that he reached over and he was looking around for something to commemorate the moment, and he had a banana left over from his lunch. And he ceremonially handed the engineer that just made the breakthrough a banana. And that was such a spontaneous, wonderful gesture that the organization picked it up and started institutionalizing it. So managers would keep supplies of bananas for great moments. And then eventually it became part of a plaque, you know, that you have a golden banana on a plaque now. But what I love about that story is it symbolizes how easy it is to get started. You know, you pick up the leftover banana from lunch, and if you present it with the right flair and show your gratitude, it becomes an important symbol that's meaningful to the person that you're thanking. And we're so bad at doing that in our family lives, with our kids, with our spouses, with our employees at work, with our customers at work, that any movement that we make is going to have big implications.
The book is called The Power of Moments, and it's by Chip and Dan Heath. It's a book that will move your heart. It will inspire your leadership. It will improve your relationships. I want to close out with some words that you wrote from the book. This is what Chip and Dan said. They said, "And that's the charge for all of us, to defy the forgettable flatness of everyday work and life by creating few precious moments. What if every organization in the world offered new employees an unforgettable first day experience? What if every student had an academic experience that was as memorable as prom? What if every patient was asked, what matters to you? What if you called that old friend right now and finally made that road trip happen? What if we didn't just remember the defining moments of our lives, but what if we made them? Our lives are the treasure chest in the closet. We can be the designers of moments that deliver elevation and insight and pride and connection. These extraordinary minutes and hours and days, they are what make life meaningful, and they are ours to create." Chip, I can't tell you and your brother thank you enough. I devour every book that you write. I consider it a gift to me and to our audience. I want to tell you thank you so much for your hard work. Thank you for being brilliant and using your brilliance to make a difference in the lives of other people. If this podcast is helpful to those of you who are listening, it would mean the world to me if you'd rate it or review it. Also, share on social media. Tell other people about the interview with Chip. Buy his book for yourself. Buy it for your team member. I promise you, your team members will love it. Finally, I want to give a personal plug for the Global Leadership Summit. That's where I first met Chip and Dan a few years back and had the honor to interview them. For those of you that are not familiar with the event, I've made it a practice to attend the summit every year for over a decade, because that's where I learn from leaders, many I've never heard of before, and many who are the sharpest in their field. It occurs every August in the United States, and it's broadcast across the United States to hundreds of sites. If you're in the U.S., there's surely a site near you, and there's sites all over the world. Bring your team with you to the Global Leadership Summit, because when the leader gets better, everyone gets better. Thanks again, Chip. I appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Craig Groeschel Leadership Podcast. Now, if you love what you are hearing from Craig and you want to show your support, subscribe to this podcast. Also, go over to iTunes, rate it and review it, and share it with your friends on social media. There's also a leader guide for this specific episode. All you have to do is go to life.church/leadership podcast. In that leader guide, here's what you're going to get. You're going to get additional resources, a recap, and discussion questions. Until next time, thank you so much for listening to the Craig Groeschel Leadership Podcast.